Welcome to What We've Watched, episode number 6. My name's Chris.
This is Emmett.
And this week we're going to talk about movie The Box.
Yeah. Such a specific...
Yeah, it's not a generic title. Not a generic title at all. Well, I mean, we'll touch on that later, but...
we will?
It doesn't come interesting. Doesn't come from...
all right. The most... yeah, so The Box... was released November 2009, the third film directed by Richard Kelly, after his very popular debut, Donnie Darko, and his very unpopular sophomore effort, Southland Tales, which I really like. But
I also really enjoyed Southland Tales, but we're both in the minority.
Yeah, I mean, I know other people that like it too. It's odd. It's one of those things. It seems to appeal to a certain sensibility.
Have you seen Donnie Darko?
Not for a long time.
Oh, okay.
So it stars Cameron Diaz and James Marsden, and it's based on unlike sort of Richard Kelly's previous two movies, which are all sort of like original screenplays, this one is actually based on the short story Button Button by Richard Matheson.
Of I'm Legend fame.
From 1970. I mean, loosely based, obviously. Yeah, just kind of uses that as a jumping off point, as usually happens with short stories being adapted into movies.
There was actually a Twilight Zone adaptation of it as well.
In the 80s, on the 80s Twilight Zone.
Actually, Richard Matheson did not like.
No. Actually, funny thing, there's actually, the movie Real Steel, 2011?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's also based on a Matheson story. Yeah. Called Steel from like the 50s.
Yeah, okay.
And that story was actually adapted into an episode of the original Twilight Zone series in like 64.
We're talking Real Steel,
the robot
fighting movie. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that was like originally Richard Matheson story from like the 50s.
Didn't know that.
It was adapted into an episode of the original Twilight Zone in the 60s. And then Button Button, which this film is based on, came out in 1970, and they adapted it into an episode of the 80s Twilight Zone.
Phil Richard Matheson probably has a lot of works that have been adapted
in one way or another. He wrote episodes like directly for the original Twilight Zone 2 and stuff like that as well. So, anyway,
A few things about this movie.
Yeah.
It's been in my queue since 2012.
Well, we should probably mention that this is the first time that we've covered a movie that neither of us...
Yeah, neither of us have seen this.
So that was a little bit of a different thing. So, you know, it was interesting because, you know, we may have completely hated it or, you know, who knows.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, it's been in my queue since 2012.
Yeah.
And that was probably the last time I watched the trailer for it. Because I probably was like, what movies have I missed around that time? I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, this looks interesting.
Yeah.
Consequently, I kind of had either forgotten or possibly the trailer.
Like what it was, what the
completely idea behind it was? Absolutely about, other than it was a couple that pushes a button and they get $1 million, but somebody they don't know dies.
Right, which is basically the premise of the story.
That's the premise of the original story.
That's pretty much all it is, because it's a short story.
Yeah. And first off, this movie's a period piece.
Yep. It
takes place in 1976. And I thought it was that actually part very well done. Authentically, almost to the point that the filming of it felt like a late 70s movie. The style and almost the... I don't want to say the film quality, but it had that kind of 70s-ish.
Yep.
Like
it didn't have that over, like that over sharp kind of bright, you know, sort of over sharpness that a lot of modern.
Well, yeah, like that modern movie would have. Yeah. Yeah. And so that was kind of neat. Like it was a movie that took place in the 70s and it almost felt like a 70s movie.
Yeah. Even like effects wise and stuff, like there wasn't anything that was really blatantly kind of, you know, CG or anything like that. Like, even effects wise, it looked a little bit.
This could have almost been like an 80s movie in some ways.
Yeah.
It actually had, I'm going to know this. It actually has a bit of, I mean, I guess we always spoiler, you know, there will be spoilers in this movie. There's kind of a twist.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of a Close Encounters feel to this movie. I felt.
Maybe a little.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen Close Encounters. But let's just say I thought this movie was a bit of a drama. Like, before watching it, a bit of a, like, a, it was a dramatic movie with maybe some, like, light, like, not comedic elements, but sort of light dramatic elements that could be funny, that could, I didn't know this was a sci-fi thriller, or at least I didn't remember that from watching the trailer.
Well, I doubt that the trailer really, I've never seen the trailer.
Yeah.
Or, I probably did, but probably, like, once when the movie was brand new, like. It's something that, I mean, I've never been interested on the basis of what it is. I've always just been interested on the basis of it's a Richard Kelly movie and it's based on a Richard Matheson story. Like, that's, you know, usually the angle that I come at things from. So I'm not really the type to just, like, watch every trailer that comes out and be like, oh, that looks like an interesting movie on the basis of what they're presenting. Like, I'm more... Like, there has to be some point of interest for me to start with, whether it's a filmmaker involved or an actor.
I wish I could remember, like, how I came across the trailer.
Well, I
probably was like, oh, there's a Cameron Diaz, Richard Kelly movie that came out that I didn't remember. And, you know, something along those lines. And
that's fine. I mean, that's my point, is that everybody approaches it a different way.
And yeah, so I did not know that this was a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And so, it kind of caught me, and I was like, early on in the movie, I was like, what the fuck is going on?
But realistically, if you're watching something like this, and say all you've seen is the trailer or whatever, you're not really going to know where it's going. So, I mean, that's kind of a good thing.
It was supposed to be. It was very good, It's just interesting going in thinking the movie is just this one kind of movie, and then it, like, making a very, like, different turn from what you expect. And
well, I sort of expect that because it is Richard Kelly.
It is Richard Kelly, yeah.
And so that's why, like, because even even like with this, like, this is still more straightforward than like Southland Tales, which is just like, as much as I like it, I still don't really understand it all.
And this Donnie is Darko,
relatively straightforward.
Oh yeah, it's a very straightforward movie.
Like, it's still weird, but it's weird in a much more accessible way.
Yeah.
Which actually, I even came across like a quote from Richard Kelly talking about it, where he's sort of saying that his goal with this movie was sort of that to make it more of a commercial kind of mainstream kind of movie, but still keep some of his own artistic sensibility. Yeah,
unfortunately, that didn't work out.
yeah, I mean, it did better, you know, it did a whole lot better than Southland Tales, both, both in terms of reviews and in terms of
it was a very cheap box office. It was a super cheap movie.
$30 million
Yeah.
And it made just over that.
Yeah.
Worldwide, so I mean, it was not a success by really, but it wasn't like a complete total failure either. No. You know, especially compared to Southland Tales. So, which I
Southland Tales was super ambitious.
I haven't looked at and I mean that can happen. And he hasn't had a movie since this one. You know, probably because it's like, you know, unfortunately, didn't really catch on with the, you know, general audiences. So. But I mean, the reviews on this weren't terrible. They were sort of mixed. And
I didn't actually look.
They were sort of like average, leaning towards like not so great. But I mean, like some things like, I think it was like, Ebert gave it like 3 out of 4 or something. So I mean,
terrible.
Well, that was an example of a prominent critic that reviewed it well. So I mean, it was mixed, but not terrible, you know, certainly not. I mean, like, Southland Tales, which, I mean, I love it just because it appeals to that sort of, you know, liking that sort of dreamlike kind of semi-experimental kind of, you know, it appeals to me in the same way as, like, David Lynch movies and things like that, right? I mean, obviously he's not as capable, but it's in that similar kind of vein. So I liked it a lot.
David Lynch has been at it for decades.
But...
So.
It was pretty much a complete failure all around. Whereas this, at least, was, you know, a slight step away from that, but still not really particularly successful.
I'm just trying to think, like, if I'd gone to see this in the theater, but only knowing what I knew about the, or only assuming what I knew about the movie from when I watched it on TV.
Which is what most people would have, and that's why.
I could easily come out of that movie going, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah,
or come out of that movie going, oh my God, that just, that I wasn't expecting.
And that's the problem. That's the problem. I mean, this kind of stuff that Kelly does, and there's other filmmakers like this,
is not really made for that kind of like general audience theatrical release kind of, you know, and it's great because nowadays there is a lot of avenues for that sort of stuff that didn't really exist before. You know, you can put things like that, you know, you can make them for probably less money now and you can put them on, you know, Netflix or whatever it is. And you don't necessarily have to have the same kind of you don't have to advertise as much, you know, as you would for like a big theatrical release and things like that. So, I mean, I think that, that kind of more artistic approach to filmmaking probably is if anything will get stronger, you know, in the future as there's just more avenues available. 'Cause I mean, heck, you even have, you know, sort of, people putting things on YouTube and stuff like that, that are almost the equivalent of the sort of experimental like art films of the past, you know.
Well, I mean,
now you can just do it at home or, and put it on YouTube.
Vimeo is just a nonstop like torrent of amazing like 8-10 minute short films.
Yeah. Whereas before, you know, how would you get that out there? It was such a rare and hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that the there will always be a market for that type of stuff, but maybe it's not sort of mainstream Hollywood movies, and that's why filmmakers like Kelly often kind of struggle in that sort of world.
Yeah.
So as far as the movie goes, first sort of thing that they do is, so you have the couple, you know, the main characters of, with Cameron Diaz and James Marsden playing them.
Yeah.
And,
their son.
Yeah. And they have like a young son. So obviously, you know, there's stuff like financial struggles and stuff like that. And,
bad accents.
They get the box delivered.
Yeah, it just comes to the door.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like, because you hear the doorbell ring and stuff, and basically someone obviously just left it on the doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it, and there's a note that says, Mr. Stewart will call upon you at 5 p.m. So then the movie basically goes through like that whole day of them going about your business.
Their business, like, terrible day!
And like learning sort of about their characters a little bit more. Yeah. Because it was a really weird way to start, because most movies usually start with the sort of setting up the characters and blah. And this one kind of goes a little bit, it kind of skips a little, because it like, it's kind of starts in like the weirdness of like, what's going on?
The mystery is immediate.
And then it just kind of puts it to the side for a minute and goes and does the day.
And I think
that was really weird.
That was really good, because it, in a way, it almost distracts you, because throughout the day, they consistently introduce things that seem like, almost seem like, you're like, there's got to be a plot point here, but at the time it seems pointless.
Yeah.
Like, there's this weird, she's a teacher, and this weird kid in her class asks about her foot.
I hate that kid.
That kid, the super weird kid, yeah.
Yeah, and I have, like, note here, creepy classroom kid scene.
Yeah, yeah.
That was weird. I mean,
the kid shows up throughout the movie, but
I hated that.
Yeah, and you find out she's got, like, a club foot from a
well, it's not a club foot. It's an like, actual,
she has no toes. Yeah. And you find out, you know, where this comes from and stuff later on, an x-ray accident. But, like, you're like, why? What purpose does this serve? And the first chunk of the movie, you're just like, what the foot? What does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as far as, like, their kid, until almost near the end of the movie, the kid serves no purpose. The kid is just, they just happen to have a family with a kid. And I'm like, why do they have a son? He is completely plot devoid in the movie until the very end, when he is super important.
Well, okay. So,
which is great, because the whole time you're just wondering, why? And then every one of these little things, you get an answer. They all pay off.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least it was sort of planned out and things weren't in there randomly, which is why I kind of say like what makes it a little bit more accessible than some of the other kind of like weird kind of arty movies that you normally,
you have no idea if they paid off or not, because you don't understand.
Yeah. And so they do kind of like bring everything together. I mean, there's still mysterious elements, but
So
after the sort of day,
he finds, he's like,
Mr. Stewart shows up.
Yeah, well, the husband works for NASA, and he's going to become an astronaut, and then he gets rejected.
Yeah, so of course he has a Corvette.
Yeah, all astronauts.
No, because not necessarily astronauts, but like, because that was the thing. Because I laughed when I saw that, because on the Apollo 13 DVD commentary, The real Jim Lovell is on, does a commentary on it. And he mentions that, like, back then, like, in the 70s and stuff, like, they all had Corvettes. And that was just, like, the car of that, that whole kind of, like, the space program. And, like, you know, all the astronauts and everything had Corvettes. So
Corvette, the official car of NASA.
Yeah. And yeah, because they even said, like, they made the joke about that the only, you know, that movie was largely very historically accurate, obviously. But the one thing that was off was that his Corvette in the movie was not the right color. What his actual Corvette in real life was. But yeah, so Arthur is the James Marsden character, is the husband, and he's got the Corvette. And I have a note about that. Everyone had Corvettes then, especially with NASA. So yeah, that sort of seemed like a joke that was maybe an in-joke on that. I'm sure that Kelly was familiar with Apollo 13 and probably wrote that in as a little bit of a nod. So Mr. Stewart, he's what'd you think of his face?
I thought that was quite well done.
Yeah, especially considering, it's not like a big budget movie or something.
Yeah, he's got like a deformity on his face where it looks like he's been
a good chunk
burned.
Of it's missing, basically. Yeah, it's pretty much just like scooped out.
Yeah.
It's just so like you can raw see, like, underneath.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like the Two-Face face from
Dark Knight. It's just his jaw and neck.
It's not as extreme in the sense that it doesn't cover as much of his face, but it's more extreme. In terms of the actual physical difference, because it's like scooped right out. Like it's like he's missing
like
basically
his,
a good chunk of his head.
It vastly alters like the sort of the profile shot of his head. Yeah.
That was really weird actually, because I thought it looked fine when it was actually showing it, but the shots where it was like more sort of straight on from a slight angle where you couldn't actually see like the missing part of the flesh, but you could just see the like indent on it and like where like his head kind of just goes that kind of looked weird. I mean, not in a way of like
must have been however they
not so much that the effect looked bad, it just more just that it just looked weird. It was just disconcerting. Actually, that's something I wanted to mention was I had this actually the very next note I have is just I just found the whole thing to have such a creepy like atmosphere, and I literally felt physically uncomfortable pretty much the entire time watching this movie.
It is very disconcerting.
Like it made me just, and even when like hardly anything was going on, just the whole atmosphere and the way it's constructed, the way that people speak, the way that people interact, the way people look, like everything just,
I think the music went a long ways. It was a very like haunting, like Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah.
Like very, you know, cause I mean, there was the weird kid in the school who shows up later at the wedding.
Yeah.
Then there's the weird babysitter. Then there's the weird old couple at the wedding. It's just one weird, and you're like, what is wrong with because you have no idea what's going on. You just think like you're being taken for a ride. But like not even initially not a good ride, just kind of like it just makes you feel, like you said, uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I mean like the music was done by some of the people from like Arcade Fire. So it's like a lot of sort of unconventional, like not typical kind of like most movie scores you usually will hear, like either it'll be like full orchestra or like a lot of electronic elements and stuff like that. This was like a lot of things, like there is like accordions and like, you know, different kinds of
a lot of horns
and, you know, things like that. So that, it was definitely a little different. I don't really know that I'd really dug it that much, but it certainly added
a 50s like sci-fi vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a unique, it made for a unique, you know, sonic tone. So that's interesting. So they had a couple of interesting things here. You mentioned the old people at the rehearsal dinner for the wedding, and there's like the old lady that's just staring.
Oh my God.
Like, that was so creepy, but it was well done. But I was just like, I loved it. Like I loved it, but it was very creepy. The she just like stared like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what's going on. You're just like, okay, what's up with the weird lady?
Yeah.
You know, well, then the weird kid shows up again. He's like working in the catering.
Yeah. By that point, I think things had started to get to where, at least for me, things had started to get to where I was just like, okay, now I'm just kind of, anything that's really weird, it's like, I'm almost kind of taking it in stride at this point. It was still weird, but it was just kind of like, okay, now I'm getting to the point where I'm expecting weirdness.
Yeah. You realize, oh, this is a weird movie.
I don't know. Well, I mean, like I say, going into it knowing that it was Richard Kelly and everything, I kind of expected weirdness, but true weirdness is the weirdness that you don't expect.
Yeah.
Like, you can expect weirdness, and that's fine, and then you can just kind of go along with it. But for something like this, you don't know exactly what direction the weirdness is going to come from, and so sometimes you get it, and you're just like, okay, I was expecting this to be weird, but...
Yeah.
Whoa. So a couple of little things in this bit was they had a really interesting thing where, because I guess we should explain. So when Mr. Stewart brings the box, it has a button on it. And basically what he says is that if you press the button, two things will happen. Somebody that you do not know somewhere will die. And then you'll be given $1 million in this briefcase, right? And there's a thing where, Arthur character, the James Marsden character, when he and his wife, Cameron Diaz, are talking about it and stuff, and he says, and they're sort of talking about, like, what it really means of, like, do you know someone or do you not know someone? And he has a thing where he says, what is it to really know someone? Do you really know me?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then there's this whole thing where she's like, oh, you know, better than you know yourself. And then he says, do you know Walter or you know, their son? And she's like, even better than I know you. But when he says the thing about what is to really know someone, do you really know me? That's like a reference to the original story. Because in the original story, what happens is he ends up dying, like, in an accident after they push the button. And the money that she receives is the insurance claim money for his death. So that's where you get, and then when she and when she was wondering to Mr. Stewart, like, well, why did my husband die? Like, you said it was going to be someone I didn't know. And Mr. Stewart's response is, did you really think you knew your husband?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's, that brings up that philosophical thing of, like, how well do you really know almost, people that you, like, think, like, you know,
proverbish kind of.
Yeah.
Like a,
and so they put that in there.
Great for a short story. That wouldn't have made such a good movie.
No, but as a reference to that, they just kind of dropped in there. Yeah. I thought that was funny because they put that in there. And then again, when after they actually do press the button and he comes and takes the box away again, there's the thing where they're like, oh, well, will you make the offer to someone else? And he says, yes, that's how it works. And I can promise you that the offer will be made to someone you don't know.
Yeah.
And then they even...
So sinister.
And implying that the people that die are the people who previously used the box or used the button. And they even say that, like, I think Arthur says that, like, oh, does that mean that we're next or whatever? And that's the way that the Twilight Zone adaptation ended, was that it ended with Mr. Stewart saying, I assure you will be someone that you don't know. And then they're like, oh, and so the big twist is like, oh no, like, what does that mean? That means that they're next or whatever. So that was interesting that they put those little references in there, even though it had nothing to do with where the movie actually goes. So there's the old lady at the wedding rehearsal dinner. That was interesting. There was the thing where there's the babysitter, which, as you pointed out, the creepy babysitter, where obviously...
Well, the weird thing is she doesn't start out creepy.
No.
Like, and that's the whole thing with, like...
But they explain.
Yeah.
Later at the end, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because everybody starts having the nosebleeds.
Yeah.
When they're being...
Well, so they're basically under his control, right? There is employee, under Mr. Stewart's employees, as he refers to them, right? And so they get the nosebleeds because they explain that his control is not, like, perfect. So when he's, you know, controlling people, they get the nosebleeds. Because they have the thing where, because he brings the baby, Arthur brings the babysitter back to, because she says that she lives in a hotel because her parents got a new house and it's not finished yet or whatever is her explanation. But by this point, she's acting, like, really strange. And then she goes into the hotel room. Well, there's all the people
in the hotel
and stuff, right?
And they're all also...
Yeah, again, that's not really explained till later. So at the time you first see it, you're just like, this is weird.
Yeah, what the fuck's up with this hotel?
Yeah, so basically it's like, oh, the hotel is just full of Mr. Sir's employees, essentially. And she goes into a room, and there's just all, like, the information, like the maps and the pictures of the couple and the pictures of, you know, everybody and stuff and the... You know, so obviously that's where, like, all the, you know, they sort of infiltrate themselves into their lives. But the thing that was funny was they had the, when she's with the kid, while they're out, They had the thing where the kid shows her all the Mars stuff, like in the basement,
right,
or whatever, right? Because obviously Arthur works on.
Well, that's a big part of the sort of the plot of the husband.
Yeah, he worked on the camera for like the Mars like
lander.
Yeah, the probe.
The Mars
that
probe
went out past Mars and stuff like that, and he's trying to become an astronaut and all this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of the sort of Mars theme. But yeah, when he shows her this Mars stuff in the basement and everything, and they have that poster that's the Arthur C. Clarke's third law about, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And they even like, and they specifically remark upon it. And he specifically, the kid's like, oh yeah, it's Arthur C. Clarke's third law. And of course, I mean, it plays in perfectly to the movie because
Marston, you know, even says it later.
You're looking at basically, you know, obviously alien derived technology and stuff that, you know, you can't understand because it's, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Mm-hmm. When they start to kind of, there's the library scene.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually when, watch before that, I have the creepy backyard guy. When she calls him and asks him to, Cameron Diaz's character calls,
Mr. Stewart
and asks him to sort of like, can we stop?
Oh, whatever right. This yeah. Is. Yeah.
Can we just stop?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he warns her that her husband needs to stop playing detective.
Right.
And, because he's kind of, her husband's kind of like looking into it. He writes down like his license plate number and gives to a cop buddy.
Yeah.
And he's trying to find out more about this guy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, I'm watching you right now. And she goes, what do you mean? Where are you? You know, this is the 70s. It's not like he's got a cell phone or anything.
Yeah.
And she looks out the window and then there's this creepiest old weird guy in the backyard. Right. Staring at her through the window with his like mouth agape. Just like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like some kind of hobo zombie. Just.
Yeah. Well, because then they show. It was just like,
what the?
Because then they actually show that Mr. Stewart is actually in the wind tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
The NASA wind tunnel, which the NSA have taken over.
Yeah.
Which.
Well, they appropriate a bunch of NASA stuff.
Yeah, but it starts out with them basically taking over the wind tunnel.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting because when they show, like, their sort of base of operations for all the crazy stuff they're doing, and it's, like, right inside, like, the wind tunnel thing, and there's all the big, like, the big fans and stuff like that. Just made me think of Goat Simulator, honestly.
It's around. Yeah, because then she goes to the library.
Yeah. Well, they both go to the library.
Really and find out what's going on.
Yeah.
With it turns out
he's like a NASA employee that got hit by lightning, and
he died and then came back.
Yeah.
And it turns out like he's just a vessel being controlled by
basically. Some sort of alien. Yeah.
I don't want to say it's aliens, but it's aliens.
I mean, it's aliens.
They never say that. But
it's aliens, but whether that means it's literally aliens from another planet or it's like extra-dimensional beings or like they never really make that clear.
Because in the movie they say like.
They talk about like gateways and
stuff.
Well,
the gateways, and they say the Earth is struck by lightning like several thousand times a minute.
Yeah.
And he works for the people that control the lightning.
Yeah.
And that's sort of.
But they still don't really.
But that's as far as the explanation ever goes.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it makes sense they'd be aliens, you know, because they sort of explain. Because what happens is.
I assumed it was going to tie back into something to do with, like, the photographs they took on Mars and stuff, but they never do tie that in.
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of maybe
one of those weird.
It's implied without making it, like, right in your face.
Yeah. Because they have this whole thing with this guy where it's when they originally, when the main characters in it, when they pressed the button, this guy ended up killing his wife. That was the death, who was, like, another NASA employee. And then, Arthur actually encounters him, and like it turns out that essentially he had to choose between his wife and his daughter and stuff, and which kind of leads into sort of the finale. But I thought that and so basically what it is that it's like a test for people's ability to put like others
ahead of themselves
and things like that and sort of human, you know. And so the idea is that if enough people don't press the button, then we'll be left alone, or there'll be more tests, Mr. Stewart actually says. But, you know, if enough people press the button, humanity will just be wiped out because they're just not worth, you know, allowing to continue. But I thought that Mr. Stewart was actually a really interesting character in the way that he's developed over the course of the
movie. Who's the actor who plays
Frank Langella?
Yeah, thank you.
He's great.
Yeah. I forgot to write it down. Yeah. I looked it up at the time, but I forgot to write
it down. Oh, yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. But I thought it was really interesting because he's presented for sort of the first chunk of it as kind of sort of a bit, maybe a bit menacing or whatever. But sort of as it goes on, it's like he still has those, because he has those like threatening moments where he's saying like, oh, don't try to look into this. Don't, you know, don't make sure your husband's not playing detective, as he said, right? That reference in that part where he's kind of very threatening. But as it sort of progresses, like it becomes very like he's actually not like a malicious character, and he often seems a bit sad at like what he has to do.
That, you know, really becomes evident at after she finds out about him at the library.
Yeah.
When she's leaving the library, she runs into him.
Yeah.
He's like, I guess, waiting for her.
Mm-hmm.
And
because Arthur at the library encounters his wife.
Right.
And is shown like the three gateways, the water, the pillars of water, right?
Yeah.
And he has to choose. And then she encounters him and
And they sit down and they have a conversation. He asks about what she thinks when she first saw him with his like horribly deformed face.
Yeah.
And, you know, he expects her to say something like revulsion or something like that.
Pity. But I think he mentions pity.
Pity. And, but because she also has a deformity,
which
that's when
the payoff to why the foot thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And she says she felt love for him because she knows what it was like to be like not persecuted, but a troubled life because of a deformity. And hers was easily hit. It just came across as a limp. He had to wear his on his face. And I think it's, in some ways, it actually kind of bugs me that this conversation happens this way, and the way he responds to it, that the rest of it plays out. But I realize, again, being that he's not, you know, obviously not a human being, he's an alien vessel. I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
But that because the test comes to a conclusion, and every test seems to come to the same conclusion. And I'm surprised that because of this conversation that their test actually came to a conclusion, that it didn't vary because of that.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe that was the point. Like, that was maybe Kelly was trying to make a point.
Maybe it's a false trap. Like, they know this is how it's going to play out, but they want to see if it will change.
Yeah.
If they keep doing it, how many times can they do it before it changes?
Well, know? I mean, they never say that it turns out the same way.
No, but that's what I'm saying. If it
turned out the same way every time, humanity probably already would have been.
We would have been watching.
So, I mean, obviously, it must be that some people don't push it and some people do, but they never really say. Everybody that we see pushes it. So.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, that's all the information we have. Yeah, so the end of the library scene is where Marsden is presented with these three gates, these three watery gates.
Yeah.
One leads to, they say, paradise, and the other two...
Salvation, yeah.
Yeah,
to eternal damnation.
And previously, the weird creepy kid flashed him the peace sign. So, at the time, you were like, what's that all about? We realize these kids indicating two, as in take the second gate.
Yeah.
Because throughout the movie...
Maybe. They never tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he chooses the second gate.
Yeah.
But throughout the movie, people are trying to let this couple in on what's going on. And that is met to degrees of success and failure.
Well, the problem is that basically it's already doomed. Because as soon as they push the button, that was it.
Yeah.
Right? They're on this path.
Yeah.
And so, because Mr. Stewart himself, and this is where it gets into kind of where he's more of a sympathetic character than what he may initially seem. I mean, he's sympathetic, but he has no power to change it any more than they do once it's in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has to just carry out his job, basically. And he specifically says, he's just like, I wish, you know, you just hadn't pushed that button or whatever. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. But, I mean, he specifically tells them, like, it would have, you know, if only you just never pushed it.
The button,
because once they did that, this was all inevitable.
Well, the test only begins when you push the button kind of thing.
And if you just reject it, then you're fine. You basically move on and everything's good. So, you know, that's sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's But it, like, it seems that from the understanding of what they show with the movie, like, kind of everybody pushes the button.
Well, and yeah, I mean, like, I mean, everyone that they show, but
possibly that's why the character of what's his name, Stewart, appears more sad than menacing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's menacing as well, but there are moments where, you know, I guess just, I mean, Frank Langella is just a great actor, and he just, he brings a lot more, like, normally a character like that would just be probably depicted very sort of cold and methodical and just kind of like, that's just how it is, you know, kind of character. And he brought, like, a lot more warmth to it, I think, just from his performance in terms of showing the world going on behind, you know, behind his eyes kind of thing, mm-hmm. that there was more to it than just, so it's like he wasn't 100% sort of under control or anything, right? Like he was just almost like just the don't shoot the messenger kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like he was doing a job that was necessary, but he wasn't necessarily enjoying it. And he wasn't necessarily saying like it was his idea. He was just, this is just how it has to be.
Mm.
And if people would just make the right choice and not push the goddamn button, everything would be fine. But, you know, humanity is humanity. And, yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. And that's sort of like the weird part with the gates, because he chooses the second gate.
Yeah.
And then I guess he gets salvation. And then that leads to a, like, but.
We don't know. It's never confirmed.
The weird thing is nothing becomes of that. He's brought back to her.
Yeah.
Back home in this weird, like, blob of water that floods their house and, like, the bedroom in the house for some reason. And he asks her about if she saw Paradise 2 or something like that, or you've also seen Heaven. And she's like, yes, I saw it.
Well, there's a theme of, like, afterlife and potential.
Yeah, and it's
brought up.
And the whole thing is what, knowing that, how that eventually he would have to kill her, or like what purpose did that scene?
I don't know, because yeah, that's the one thing that's never explained at all.
Yeah, that's the,
they never even tell you whether he picked
right or wrong.
Right or wrong. Like
yeah. You see some bright lights.
All you have to interpret is from what happens. And it's like, well, I mean, is it salvation in the sense that, their final choices, you know, are selfless for the good of their kid. And therefore they give up, they essentially give up their own lives.
Yeah.
Cause it's not like they just have, you know, one parent is dead and the other parent goes on and lives out their life with their kid.
No,
one parent is dead. One parent has to go to jail for that death.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, both parents are basically gone, but the question is, well, will that be better for the kid in the long run? Because they failed the test, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore maybe they're not.
Well, they'll have $1 million.
They'll be better without them.
Because the kid gets $1 million on his 18th birthday.
Yeah, yeah. They pass the money on down to the kid. So
yeah, because they take the kid and they make him deaf and blind. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they present he will be deaf and blind his whole life, or you can kill your wife and your kid will be cured.
Which I feel like is kind of like, I understand where they're going with that, but I almost feel like they should have just maybe threatened, like, the kid's life or something.
Yeah.
Because the whole, like that's kind of...
You know what? People are deaf and blind in real life.
Yeah,
that's
and they live their lives. And it's kind of insensitive to say that if you're deaf and blind, like,
you might as well be dead,
or whatever. Like, that's a little harsh, I think.
No, what they're saying is if you're deaf and blind, your mother might as well be dead.
Yeah, well, or whichever. But, I mean...
And your father might as well be in jail.
I did find I was a little uncomfortable with that.
Like, what would you rather have? Be deaf and blind and both your parents, or deaf and blind and your mom dead and your dad in prison?
Well, but I mean, they don't give the kid a
choice. I think it
comes
down to, like, there's a bit of, like...
Well, I mean, and it's...
The kid is being clearly punished for the mistakes of his
exactly.
parents.
Exactly. And I feel like perhaps that punishment is not always the same, but it's tailored to the individual.
That's probably
because
true.
Because they specifically, they can't deal with the prospect that their kid was like that. Whereas another set of people would be like, well, we can accept that. I mean, if that's how it is, that's how it is. People have disabled children all the time and they don't love them less.
See, I wonder,
you know, because they're disabled. Like, that's crazy.
If that happens,
but it's different from person to person.
Does that become like if, say, for example, if they had chosen to, no, I'm not going to kill my wife. We're going to live with our deaf, blind son, and we're mm-hmm. going to raise him. And regardless, yeah. like, is that like a second part of the test that you can pass? I feel the movie.
Maybe, but they never explain it yet. Again, I know. It's one weird of those things.
Because the movie, up until that part, starts to do a lot of explaining, yeah. and then right, like the last 15 minutes, they start playing real loose and fast.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, I was like, no, keep going, tell me a bit more, yeah. tell me a bit more.
I mean, you know? I kind of...
at the same time, leaving it, like, kind of open was kind of, like, leaving you with a bit of mystery is kind of good, too.
It is good sometimes, but not if it's sort of sloppily done, which yeah. I feel like it kind of was.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that I liked this movie only on the level of, because I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't particularly impressed. Like it was fairly mediocre to me.
I sort of feel the same way. Like I enjoyed watching it. I'm actually really glad I watched it.
I'm glad I saw it.
I literally only watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I'm still sort of having a bit of time divorcing my, do I just like the movie because of the way it surprised me?
Yeah.
And, or did I? Well, do I feel this is actually a good movie? Like, I'm still, I don't know if I would recommend this movie yet. I don't know if I'm at that point. Like, in another week, I'll have to think. I like certain people. I could definitely say, like, see this movie. Like,
I mean, I would give it.
You'll be pleasantly surprised when you watch this movie.
I would recommend it only on the level of like I say, like I would say that I liked it. But see, well, oftentimes when people say that they liked a movie, what they really mean is that, like, they really liked it, and it was yeah. a really good movie. If people just kind of thought a movie was okay...
They didn't dislike it.
You know what I mean? Exactly. And that's more how I feel, is, like, I didn't really dislike it, so I guess, technically, therefore, I liked it, yeah. but it's the most mild possible like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we're, you know, when we
it's,
say
it's
like...
It's right at, like, 5 out of 10. Like,
yeah,
right
when
in
we
the
say
middle.
I liked it, I just mean that I didn't dislike it. Mm-hmm. I didn't go, oh, that was terrible.
Yeah,
you know, but at the same time, yeah, it was pretty mediocre.
I felt
definitely not going to replace Southland Tales as my favorite Richard Kelly movie.
No. I felt, yeah, I definitely didn't like it as much as Southland Tales, but I,
because it was just less interesting. Like, Southland Tales is just interesting because I don't understand it all, but I'm like, there's so much going on, and you're just like, whoa, there's this, and then there's this, and then there's that, and then there's this guy doing this. And this movie, I was just like, I don't really care that much.
As parts of this movie was, and as intriguing as they give you all the stuff at the beginning, where you're like, what does any of this mean? And then as they give you all what everything, like the importance of all the things you don't understand at the beginning and towards the end, and how sort of weird the movie is, I don't know if it was actually, in a way, weird enough.
Yeah.
Like, they almost played it a little too close to the vest. And that goes back to what you're saying. Like,
I agree. I think part of the mediocrity of it. Like,
but I don't know.
I feel like you need to go
time,
all the way, one way or the other.
Yeah.
You got
to
decide which
like,
way you're going to go and go
if
with
they
it.
Had really gone, like, really out there with it.
It felt way too compromised.
If it would have been too out there. Like, if just sort of the movie in the form that they did it, it could not have been any more, any less than this.
It felt too compromised. It just felt like
they couldn't commit.
It felt like you couldn't commit to going one way or the other. It's like you, after what happened with Southland Tales, it's like you wanted to try to do something more commercially viable and more mainstream, but still keep some of his own artistic sensibility, right? Which is literally commented upon that. And I just feel like that unfortunate thing of that is it just leads to very mediocre product in the end, because you're compromising that position. You know, you should go, I mean, Donnie Darko is basically a fluke.
Oh,
because
yeah.
it was popular and successful while at the same time being very weird and being very
yeah
his vision. And that happens sometimes, you know. Uh-huh. And usually it's a first film. Like, usually they come out of the gate. I mean, you look at something like Neil Blomkamp, where, like, District 9, like, everyone loved it. It did super, super well. Like, super, super well.
Yeah.
And then his films since then have kind of failed.
Yeah.
And
Elysium was...
Yeah, I mean, it did very poorly commercially and critically. Chappie didn't really do much better. I really like Chappie.
Yeah, I need to watch it still.
Yeah, Elysium I thought was not so great.
It's one of those, like,
but I really
I
like
Chappie. Enjoyed it,
but again, it's that, like, District 9 was, it was almost like it was a fluke. Like, it was just so good on so many levels, and it had actually hit with an audience and critics as well. And I feel like that was kind of the same sort of thing with Richard Kelly. Like, with Donnie Darko, kind of just hit the mark. And even though I really like Southland Tales, I can see why it didn't work with mainstream audiences. And I just think, like, you have to, unless you're going to get that one in a million kind of fluke thing where it works on all those levels, you have to commit one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And you have to just decide, I'm just going to stick to what I do.
Yeah.
And you know, commercial success be damned, which is a tough one because who's going to give you money to make a movie if you're not going to make money for them? Like, what company is going to do that? But at the same time, if you try to compromise it and be like, well, I'm going to try and pull back a little bit, make it a little more commercial while still trying to retain my own kind of artistic style, it often just doesn't work. It's just that that compromise creates something that...
Well, you end up with that situation where you end up with a movie that is like, if people didn't know Richard E. Kelly did this, people could go, oh, this is somebody doing a movie of the style of Richard E. Kelly and just not and failing or not doing it as well. Like, it's almost, it feels like he's imitating himself.
Yeah, which is a weird thing to do when it's only your third movie.
Third movie, yeah.
And you don't really...
What has he done since then?
Nothing. That's the whole point.
This is his last movie since... Okay, actually, I didn't
realize. Right, because who would actually be like, oh, here's a, you know, here's another $30 million to make another movie after nothing that he's done has made money or gotten any critical thing except for his first movie?
I feel like he could move to TV.
Well, apparently, I don't know. I've seen some conflicting things because there was one thing that he was supposed to have been working on that was supposed to be out in like 2014, but it never materialized. And then according to IMDb, there's like a different title entirely listed on there now that supposedly just started pre-production that's supposed to be out next year. So I mean, maybe something will come. I mean, people like that that have obviously have a talent and obviously have vision, like, they're always going to get another job eventually.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just takes a while because it's hard. Like, it's just
somebody's
hard...
going to allow him to take the risk again.
Yeah, I mean, especially,
really,
like,
crazy.
If there's a script that looks like it might work, you know, like, if you do a script first, it's like that a script is cheap.
Yeah.
You do the script first, and if it looks like, oh, well, that could actually lead to something that might work, then they may be more inclined, right? But I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it is what it is. It's a tough thing.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing.
But, I mean, like I said, I'm glad I watched this movie.
Yeah.
Definitely. It could have been better. It could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
This, I mean.
Well, that's what I'm not saying it was terrible.
Really,
I find
the only really,
really kind
of. Like I said, it's a little mediocre.
Yeah.
Like, the only really bad thing about this movie is Cameron Diaz's accent. It's.
I don't know. I don't know enough about.
It comes and goes throughout the movie.
Yeah.
She pulls a storm. And it just, there's a number of scenes where she doesn't have the accent at all. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay, I see, whatever. It was just surprising. But I guess it was set where it was set for a reason because of the space program. It was set in Virginia, but that's where NASA and the space program was. Like, it made sense that she would have an accent. You know?
I guess. I mean, he didn't, so.
That's actually true.
Like, sometimes people.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, you could
people
be
move
from
around.
Anywhere. Yeah,
people
you
move
be
around,
from anywhere,
and it's like, I didn't really see any particular reason for it. But
I guess maybe they were just happy with
it. But it also didn't stand out to me as good or bad. It was just, it was indifferent. It was just another thing that was just totally indifferent. It was like, whatever.
Yeah.
She's got a southern accent. Yeah. Who cares? I mean, we watched how many years of True Blood? Like,
And
with extremely varying levels of mastering the accent.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even be bothered. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares about that?
Yeah.
Honestly.
It is. I think it's an intriguing, and I think a lot of that just comes from the source material. Like I hunted down the short story.
Yeah, I mean, the basic concept is a good
story,
concept, but
and
I think it works better. I think it works better as just the basic idea.
Yeah,
and having the little sort of like Twilight Zone, you know, ending and not knowing. Not having anything beyond that, and not having to read anything further into it than what's presented in the story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I say, it's basically just an excuse to go off on this other thing. I mean, it provided inspiration.
Yeah.
And that's as simple as that. I mean, he obviously did his own thing with it, but definitely took inspiration.
Just lots of neat ideas in this movie, though. Like, Stewart had this like device in the wind tunnel that was made of all these little tiles that would flip over, mm-hmm. and they kept showing like parts of the earth, like maps of the earth.
Yeah.
And then all the tiles would go clack, 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 clack. It was like an old airport.
Well, it's very much of the period, right?
Yeah, obviously.
They're not going to have some sort of sophisticated digital.
And they kept cutting to it, showing parts of the world, and he kept showing interest in it. But again, no explanation. You're like, I wonder what that's all about. And, you know, the wind tunnel had this huge, well, they clearly this like weird watery thing was like their transport system.
Yeah.
And both the hotel swimming pool and the, this wind tunnel had this. Mm-hmm. And again, a very like, it's interesting. Like an interesting idea, concept.
The gateways at the library.
The gateways at the library. Exactly.
The pillars of water that you go through.
Yeah. They were this like gateway system that they used to go
wherever.
To wherever it was that they went.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, brevity on this explanation was a good mystery.
Yeah.
Versus the brevity on some of the stuff, you were like, well, we could have had an answer there. You know, I mean, maybe they just couldn't come up with
anything. Well, I think that answers, okay. My feeling on that is answers are good when it would make it more satisfying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
answers are not good if it would make it less satisfying.
I mean, there's probably some versions of script that had them explaining stuff, and it wasn't good.
Because we have a movie, and when you have like a movie like this, especially like something like this that has a lot of sort of mysterious elements, if you over-explain, if you have a lot of exposition and basically the whole sort of end of the movie, and we've seen this.
And it's often bad.
There are movies like this where the whole sort of like last, you know, 10 minutes or something is just explaining everything that's just happened. And saying like, well, this is why this happened, this is why this happened, and this led to this, and this is why this is done.
Yeah.
And it's usually terrible.
Yeah, yeah. You unravel the mystery and you find out it's
because
a turd.
You're just like, well, like that makes having those explanations just is less satisfying.
Yeah.
Whether it's because they're just bad explanations, mm-hmm. or whether it's because the way that the explanations are handled is not very good, or. Yeah. Whatever reason,
dictated to you in such a way that's
for
not
whatever
great.
or whether it's just not satisfying because it's not sort of what you were hoping or what you had in mind. Like you were using your own imagination, and then they just kind of came out and told you, and you were like, "Oh, well, that's not as good as what I had in mind."
Well, that's the big thing.
For whatever reason,
yeah.
Usually it just doesn't work if you over-explain. But at the same time, you want enough explanation that it's satisfying. You don't want to be left like, "Well, I don't care." Because I have no idea what any of that means.
And
if I have no idea what any of it means, why should I care?
Yeah,
there has to be some
fine
sort of
line.
Point,
that's the right? fine line on that stuff where you're able to come up with ideas in your head about what this might be, and they give you just enough that you can concrete those ideas in your head and you're happy with what you come up.
Yeah.
And then it goes, and then movies tend to either go one way or the other, or then they give you an explanation that is that doesn't mesh with what you came up with,
mm-hmm.
and thus is wholly unsatisfactory.
Which is often what happens with audiences.
Yeah, or they don't give you enough to concrete it, like you said,
yeah.
at which point you don't care.
Like, yeah, I just
very
feel like...
rarely are the mysteries written well enough
yeah.
and then explained yeah. that, you know.
And so I think that it's something that you have to find that right balance. That.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of how
it felt. So I guess that's the box.
Yeah.
I probably did better than if it was called Button. Who's got
the
button?
I mean, that's a very sort of short story title, but the kind of thing that does not work as a
film
movie
title.
Which is fine. I mean, that's how it's been. I mean, the amount of like movies that are adapted from stories or even novels where they have a different title, like it's very common. Because what works as a cinematic title is often very different from what you can get away with as a literary title.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for short stories, because short story titles can be almost anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're just flipping through the magazine or whatever that is put in. I mean, this story was in Playboy originally.
Wow.
That was where it was originally published. Which was, I mean, not an uncommon thing. A lot of major, major writers had stories published in Playboy back in the day. Like that is actually a pretty prestigious you know, place for stories to be published back then.
Stories.
Back then.
Yeah.
Like in the 60s.
I read it for the stories. That's probably where that originated from.
Could be, yeah. I mean, it's, anyways.
But yeah, so, yeah, I guess we sort of feel kind of the same about it. Okay, not great, yeah. Not terrible.
But I mean, that's the experiment. I mean, if you go into something you've never seen before, you don't really know how you're going to feel about it. So we could have hated it.
I'm glad I didn't, actually. I'm glad
you could have hated it, or you could have loved it, or we could have fallen
I'm glad dead center, I liked which is pretty it as much as I we did. I'm glad I didn't, like, it wasn't like a slog to get through.
Well, obviously, it's always, you know? It's always unfortunate to have to watch something that you just
sometimes watching a terrible movie and hating it is better than watching a movie that is just boring you.
Yeah.
But
this almost was borderline on that for me, though. Like, I was not overly impressed. Like, it was okay, but... Yeah. You know, it was good enough that I didn't just hate it, but at the same time, I didn't particularly enjoy it.
So, you know, there's so if you haven't seen it, there's
that's pretty much everything you need to know.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a waste of time to watch it, but I think it's
it's a little long though. I mean, it is like 2 hours, and for something like this, it just felt like
could have been shorter.
Could have been shorter.
I also feel it could have been longer.
I was sort of surprised actually to find out that it was 2 hours.
2 hours.
I was kind of like, oh, really?
Okay.
Seems a bit much for something like this. You know, for something taken from a short story, and like I say, obviously that's just a jumping off point. Like any movie that's taken from a short story, they go in this.
I feel like they more jumped off of the Twilight Zone episode. Than the short story, but
I don't remember if I've seen the episode.
Because you're. I was actually going to ask you about that because I know you've watched a lot of Twilight Zone.
I've watched a lot of the original series.
And this is from the 80s.
I've watched some of the 80s series, like a fairly good chunk of it, but some of it was a long time ago.
So you may have seen it.
So I may have seen it once and not remember it. I don't remember seeing it, but
yeah. Well, So that's it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll have something more exciting, something a little more...
That's the way it goes, right?
Emmett, tell the folks where they can contact us, where they can listen to us.
So the main location for it is on SoundCloud, What We've Watched podcast. We've been getting a nice little boost in listens lately on there. So I really thank everybody for checking it out. That's amazing. Please do leave us comments, though. We're still a little lacking on comments. And the thing about comments is just that it's how we sort of know, like, what's being done well, what can be improved on, what we can sort of work on, what people want to hear.
Yeah.
So it's all about that. Sort of
we need the feedback allows us to deliver a better podcast.
Yeah, and that's really what it's about. I mean, it's not about like just kind of self-gratification of like, look how great we are because we have all these comments. Like, I don't care about that. It's really just because
I care about that.
Yeah, well, that's
no, I'm just kidding.
That's fine. I don't care. I mean, that's fine too. Like, anybody does really care about it, that's fine. But for me, it's really just about I want feedback.
Yeah.
On so that I know what can be worked on and what can be improved, because I want it to be as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be great. We are on iTunes now as of like last week, so all the episodes are on there. So you can subscribe on there, you can leave comments on there, you can leave ratings on there, which would be great because that helps other people find us. And then we have a Twitter for it as well, at What We've Watched. And you can leave comments there. You know, you can send us messages through that. messages through that. And, oh, my God. Again, leave feedback. Let us know what we can do. And
ask us questions.
Questions, suggestions for future, episodes, anything like that. Is great.
We get enough questions, we might read the questions on the show.
And and of course all the sort of updates and everything are on there. Whenever we update, it'll be on there and stuff. So
podcast generally goes out Fridays.
Usually Friday, yep. That's really what it comes down to is we know that people are listening now and we really appreciate that, but we just would love the feedback simply because we do want to make it as good as we can make it. That's simple as that. So definitely just thank you very much.
Yep. All right. Cheers. See you next week.